That mistress of mirth, the celebrated comedian Ms. Penny Ashton, makes a welcome and long overdue return to the panel today. Good afternoon.
Thank you very much. I'm your mistress of mirth.
With the critic and physicist, an odd career combination, but it's served him well so far. Mr. Stephen McCabe, good afternoon. Hello to both of you. Let's find out about what you've been doing. Penny, your show won an award, Best Performance in a Comedy.
It did. It was very exciting. There weren't as many in the comedy section, but still, it's good, yes. It was called Promise and Promiscuity, and it was a Jane Austen pastiche that I did in the Auckland Fringe, and yes, it went really, really well, which was great, because I really had no idea. I've never written a solo theatrical performance and played 9 characters before, and I was like, does it make sense? Can people tell the difference between the characters? And then clearly they can, so that's marvellous. So I'm about to take it on tour to Canada and tour it all over the place as much as I possibly can.
You're going to tour the hell out of it, but it's
I was going to say something else, but yes,
it's very well received, obviously, and you've pulled it off, and which is a bit of a tour de force.
Yeah, and it was great because it was so much work. I did a lot of work for months because the play was made up of a lot of mostly my writing, songs that Robbie Ellis, who used to be on Concert and stuff, he did the rearrangement of these classical pieces that I wrote words to, but also there's about 30 lines probably throughout the play that were from Jane Austen's books as well, that I'd put into context with my story, and I did a direction with Ben Crowder. He was great, and putting that all together and at TAPAC were really wonderfully supportive as well. So there was so much work, and it was funny, and like 15-year-old boys liked it.
So it's family friendly.
Yeah, which is so strange for me.
That's
like a whole world of concession tickets that have been opened up to me that have previously been denied in my R18 status.
A whole new audience. People.
I know, exactly. And so literary fans, and you know, because there's no swearing at all. There's a lot of jokes about balls, obviously attending balls and fingering the pianoforte and things like that.
Those 15-year-old boys taking care of all that.
I think so, you know. So
keep,
I think there's that sort of edge to it as well, was been really good. And for the people that were actual purists, there were all the lines such as happiness in marriage is entirely a matter of chance.
Does it say by Jane Austen and Penny Ashton?
It does.
It does. You're cheeky.
I'm shameless,
aren't you?
Yeah. You are shameless. Of course I did, darling.
Are you still marrying people?
I am. I've got one coming up on Saturday. I've done 9 now. I've done 9 weddings. I've got about another 5 booked in so far, and they're starting to come in. These ladies are very organised for next year. I was almost double booked on March the 14th, or the 7th, 2014. So these ladies are very organised, generally the ladies. And it's just so much fun. It's wonderful. It's the best work environment. Everybody's happy. You get free wine. You know, they keep trying to make you stay for lunch, and you're in these beautiful settings. I mean, I'll probably get sick of going to Waiheke eventually, but I'm still enjoying going to Stony Ridge Vineyard and sitting there and looking at the beautiful olive groves and then marrying people, and it's all gushy and sappy and lovely, and I really like it.
Any funerals yet? Are you available for all sorts
Everybody
of things?
Everybody asked me that. I've done baby namings. That was exciting. Yeah. He was such a cute little baby, this one that I just did not long ago. But no, I think, because I'm a bit of a wussy pants, I think I'd cry too much in funerals. Maybe eventually, I don't know. But
you could be a professional mourner.
Like North Koreans. Yeah, but no, maybe eventually. I think lots of people do it. And you don't actually have to be certified, obviously, because somebody's already dead. Doesn't make any difference if you have your, you know, certifications or not. But no, I'm just enjoying the happy occasions at this point. But it would be, you know, funerals that celebrate someone's life and are funny is something that I would definitely be interested in eventually, but I think I'll wait a little bit.
Penny Ashton on the panel with Steve McCabe.
Kelda.
You've revived a blog of yours.
Yes, this is something that I started working on when I was living back in the US a few years ago, called The Letters Page. And what I was doing is when things displeased me, I would write to the people responsible. It's usually, you know, corporate or government type things. And I actually, you know, send people emails saying, please explain yourself, please justify yourself. And of course, coming to New Zealand the first few years, I thought, well I don't need to do this anymore. Everything's wonderful down here, you know. and you know, obviously the rose-coloured spectacles have finally come off. And the catalyst, not entirely surprisingly, was obviously NovoPay.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, you know, it's comedy gold right there. Gold.
Shocking.
I mean, I've actually had an email today from my my business manager at school telling me that NovoPay will be overpaying me this week. And she's contacted them and told them not to, and they're just so glacially slow that they won't be able to get this sorted in time. So obviously, when this all kicked off with me a few weeks ago when I was underpaid, I thought, well, you know, the Minister of Education needs to be held to account for this. So I wrote to Hekia Parata.
Our favourite lady.
Who actually, I've written to her a few times now, and obviously things for her are always somebody else's fault. She always refers to me to either John Banks or Stephen Joyce, which does raise the question of what she's doing all day. So I've actually written to John Key and asked him what she's doing all day, and I've not heard back from him yet, rather annoyingly. I don't think Stephen Joyce actually reads his email anymore. Winston Peters apparently will be getting back to me. I can hardly wait.
Wow.
John Banks has replied, to his eternal credit. I mean, the answer was nonsense, but he did actually take the trouble to reply, which was very big of him, really.
So are these real life letters, or are they like the Henry Root letters?
Well,
where
I did have that in the back of my
mind. With an eye on publication.
No, I do actually send these emails to the people involved. And like I say, when I write to Hekia Parata, I get a nice email back from Hekia Parata, the ministerial secretary, saying, we have forwarded this email to Stephen Joyce because he's the minister for absolutely everything these days.
That's what Henry Root used to do, didn't he?
Yeah.
He used to write genuine letters to people and then publish their replies.
Yes.
And his trick was to include a £1 note.
Yes.
Which was always a donation to the Conservative Party.
Yeah. Well, it's really hard to do that in email. Yeah. So I could scan one, couldn't I?
Put a little PayPal.
There you go, yeah. But I've been doing this. And like I said, I'm getting some replies. Like I say, John Key, from his office, it's just the usual, we are terribly sorry that we are just not interested. And, you know, I'm not getting replies from those. But you know, some of these people are replying. And it's fun.
Has Baycourt come knocking yet?
No, for me, well, like I said, I haven't actually been overpaid yet.
Okay.
I'll get my paycheck on Wednesday morning, so probably on Wednesday afternoon they'll be knocking on, you know, send the boys round.
My sister got overpaid in Christchurch with her new primary school job as well.
So has she had the boys round yet?
No, I don't think so.
It's an absolute farce, it really is.
Especially for $22, that was, you know.
That wasn't
outrageous.
Even paid to her!
I know, exactly. Your contributions.
Good luck. So you're thinking of posterity, you've got to have an iron on.
Well,
your letters, their replies, just quickly.
Well, basically, yeah. Plus, it's an opportunity to be not only to vent, but to vent very publicly and focusedly.
All right, so it's online?
Theletterspage.com.
4:15, thank you. Not much we can say about our first topic, except that the rain's been welcomed, really. Most of the North Island's received a welcome smattering of rain. Some areas got up to 25 mils yesterday. First rain for many places since early February. I don't expect extended comments. We just need more, don't we?
Well, yes. I mean, I must say that I've enjoyed this summer immensely, which the farmers don't want to hear at all, of course, even though I was inside writing, scribbling away and performing and stuff, so I hadn't actually got to enjoy the beach as much, but it's just been really lovely. But I don't get how there's only 10 days reserves in those Wellington reserves that they're going to have to dip into. And, like, there's just so, I don't know, that's quite a scary sort of short time, I'd have thought.
Jim Salinger says 3 days of rain seems to be about the required amount, I think. Consistent rain to end the worst drought in 70 years. And, of course, it has to be the right type of rain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to put a positive spin on it, of course, in about a year and a half's time, we're going to get an amazing glut of really high-quality wine.
Yes. Well, as long as it doesn't rain at the wrong time for the wine harvest, of course. But we won't go into that. We went into it one other time.
And there's 130 million litres a day, is it, I think, that they use? No. They need to get it down to in Wellington?
Yeah, they're at 140. They want to drop it down to 130, which isn't a huge change. It's less than 10%.
But it's still a lot of water. I mean, this is all the numbers have sort of boggled my mind, actually. I had no idea.
Continuing speculatively, and in fact, there are a lot of speculative topics in the panel today. Scientists are confident that the rare earthquakes in Auckland at the weekend are not a sign of volcanic activity. Now, did you feel them?
No.
Me neither. I was really annoyed as a Cantabrian. I wanted to experience them.
The earth didn't move for you, did it?
No, I was walking. I was walking to see Dominion Road Stories in the Auckland Arts Festival. Actually, this was charming. A whole group of elderly people in the group Marvellous performing a show at a bowling club in Mount Eden. So I was on my way walking to that, and I didn't feel a thing.
Me neither.
A magnitude 3.9 at 4:05 yesterday at a depth of 6 km. Centred around Motutapu Island in the Hauraki Gulf, and 4 minutes earlier, a 3.1 in the same spot. And as is usual when Auckland has an earthquake, people south of the Bombay Hills took to Facebook with a photo of a packet of Jaffas on its side, with one Jaffa having rolled out. Garden furniture with a chair fallen over, and the caption, Auckland can rebuild.
Yes, and froth that, on their cappuccinos slopped to the side.
You know, that joke hasn't got old in all the years it's been used.
I know. And then people give us sort of rubbish about getting surprised, you know, like reporting earthquakes and all, but it's so unusual. It is a news story, so I'm sorry. It is worth reporting,
okay.
I think, and talking about.
Yeah, I mean,
as a Cantabrian, I can say that.
But it's worth mentioning, you know, they're saying, you know, that there will be no more earthquakes. Let us remember what happened in Italy a couple of years ago. 6 geologists sentenced to 6 years in prison for not giving adequate warnings of the L'Aquila earthquake that killed 309 people.
Has that been brought? Are they still in jail?
As far as I know, they were convicted and there was convicted sentence. I don't know if it's appealed or not, but yeah, in Italy, Giving bad geological advice is a criminal offence.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, New Zealand's biggest metropolitan population is generally aware that that volcanoes are the most likely significant nearby hazard. Michael Rosenberg is our first phone guest, a volcanologist working for GNS Science. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jim. How are things?
Very well, thank you. Very good, thank you, Michael. At what point do you as a volcanologist become interested in earthquake activity in a town like Auckland?
I'm not particularly concerned about a link between these earthquakes and the volcanic activity. But I think it's fair for Aucklanders to be significantly aware of that.
Because something was published at the weekend suggesting a link between earthquakes and volcanoes could be established if the quake was of a very high magnitude, 8 or similar?
Yeah, it's a subject of ongoing research, and certainly it's something that is possible. And there's a couple of main ways that earthquakes could affect volcanoes. And one of them is essentially when you have a very large earthquake, it might shake up the magma system underneath the volcanoes. And the other way is a sort of transfer of stress, if you like. So you release it in one place by the earthquake and you push it on to the volcano system. The trouble is for that to work, for an earthquake to trigger an eruption, you really need to have the volcano kind of sitting there primed, ready to go.
Right.
And we know in Auckland's case that we don't have magma sitting at shallow depth. So what we need to look for are potential changes much, much deeper in the crust.
How soon do you... I mean, I'm not trying to beat the story up into a, you know, could a volcano be imminent? I'm not trying to suggest that. But how much warning do you get of magma, though, really?
It depends on where you are. And in Auckland's case, based on the studies that have been done mostly at Auckland University in the last couple of years, most of the magmas get to the surface very, very rapidly. There's a couple of volcanoes where they think the magma has kind of hung around for a little while, and by that I mean, you know, perhaps years to decades. But for a very thin, runny sort of magma that we would expect underneath Auckland, because that's what we've had in the past for the last 250,000 years or so, those sort of magmas get to the surface very, very quickly. And that could be in the order of hours to days.
Would there be a pattern of activity that would tell us that if ever Rangitoto was re-energising or even some whole new volcano was trying to express itself out in the Hauraki Gulf?
Absolutely. And that's what the whole monitoring network around Auckland is geared towards doing. So we think that the magmas underneath Auckland have started to melt and started to move between about 80 and 100 kilometres down. And what those magmas would do, when they start to get unhappy and unsettled, they would start to create earthquakes. So there's a network of 11 seismometers around the Greater Auckland area, firmly anchored into the rock or some of them down boreholes. And those are specifically geared towards detecting and locating any earthquakes that might happen underneath the volcanic field.
Would you have quite a lot of them?
There should be a swarm of earthquakes, and we should be able to map where they are and see if they are becoming more shallow.
Tongariro's latest eruption sort of snuck up on volcanologists, didn't it? And that was accompanied by a small earthquake. And I suppose the only other relevant question is how accurately is science predicting volcanic eruptions these days, given, as you say, Michael, that it can be quite quick?
Well, the thing to do, and this is what we're very conscious about in monitoring New Zealand's volcanoes particularly, is you need to look at a whole series of parameters. You need to look at the earthquakes, you need to look at the changes in the gases and the fluids, and you need to look at that over a long period of time, and you need to look at it continuously. The other thing to remember is that every volcano is its own little system, and it's all going to behave slightly differently. So we've got to watch each of the volcanoes as closely as we can, understand what we think it's doing now based on the recent history, and give our best forecast as to how we think it's going to behave.
Would you still be able to give 48 hours warning of a volcanic eruption, I suppose, is the reassurance?
Well, we would aim to do a lot better than that. But again, you know, it's different at different volcanoes. We might have, you know, perhaps only a few hours at Auckland. It could be as bad as that. Other volcanoes like Tongariro or Ruapehu, we would hope to have quite considerably more lead in time, because those magmas are a lot thicker and stickier, so they're a bit slower to move, and they create a lot more signals that we would aim to to measure.
Right, so only a couple of hours for Auckland, and could that be like a really massive eruption?
There are a few different scenarios, and one of them is that a new vent will pop up underneath the sea. Could be Manuka Harbour, Waitemata Harbour, and the other one, of course, is on land. We would hope to, I mean, we aim to give as much warning as possible, and that's why we've got the network of seismometers to look at things really deep before they get going.
Yeah.
The sort of eruptions that we can expect from an Auckland basalt volcano are what we can get an idea from studying the existing cones and lava flows and explosion craters. So something similar to what we've seen in the past is most likely. So not enormous, but certainly when you pop a volcano close to New Zealand's largest city, anything is going to have a huge impact.
Yeah, indeed. All right, Michael, thank you. That's the state of play with Auckland's future volcanoes. Michael Rosenberg, GNS Science. Newspapers are reporting a string of incidents in or near Hamilton Gardens, which they say are casting doubt on the area's safety. The latest occurrence was an attempted mugging with either a real or replica gun, it's not clear which, thwarted by an off-duty policeman who disarmed this attacker, balaclava clad, pinned him down with the help of a passerby. He was the wrong person entirely to attack, wasn't he?
Just a touch.
A week ago, a 60-year-old Chinese tourist attacked, robbed at knife point on the edge of Hamilton Gardens, and another incident near the Waikato River the previous Monday where a woman was approached by a man demanding money. Do these alarm you? We want to talk about rural crime, actually, with Nolene Holt primarily, but, you know, we're told crime's down, yes, down a lot, but hang on, people get mugged by a knife point and faux or real gunpoint in the middle of Hamilton?
I don't know. I've spent a lot of time in the Hamilton Gardens because they have the Hamilton Gardens Summer Festival every year, and I've performed in it sort of four or five times and performed in other things there and wandered about it loads. Never usually, well, after my shows have been late, actually, and I did a stand-up show that was quite late, but there were loads of people around. But I've never felt unsafe in there. And it's a real shame if people are, because it is beautiful. It's the best beautiful botanical gardens, really interesting and just a gorgeous setting. So it would be a shame if people started to feel unsafe in there.
Yeah, I've been there. I've only been there during the days, but it always seems like a well-populated, well-lit kind of place.
It can be a bit dark in some places at night, but yeah, it's a gardens.
Interestingly, according to the Big Nation Master Survey of Countries, New Zealanders feel less safe. Perception of safety, we're 15 out of 15 countries surveyed. We don't think we're safe, even though the police tell us that that's based on skewed perceptions and that crime is going down.
I don't generally feel... I'm a bit of... Where sometimes I feel I'm a bit too bulletproof, I think, sometimes. But I've never had a problem. So I've been very lucky in my life so far that way. So I just don't really sort of think about it too much.
Rural Women New Zealand have launched a rural survey on crime and safety today that's aimed at making rural communities safer places to live. And Nolene Holt is Rural Women New Zealand's executive officer and kindly joining us now. Hello, Nolene.
Hi there.
A lot of rural crime, we've been told by various experts, actually isn't even reported, Nolene. That's one of the problems you've got, I suppose.
I think, yes. Crime and family violence is underreported, and there's a lot of overseas research around that, and we feel it's the same. In fact, we know it's the same in our rural areas in New Zealand.
I think according to the International Crime Victims Survey, which is done every so often, in fact, you're at quite a lot of risk in the countryside of New Zealand compared to major cities. It's usually the opposite overseas. You know, you'll get mugged in the middle of a big town, but not so much in a small town. But I think we actually run counter to that trend to an extent. How big a problem is it out there, in terms of it being reported to you, Nolan?
Well, from the feedback we're getting from people is that it's larger than we realise. And one of the things is there, a lot of people do feel powerless because the police station may be a long way, maybe a single-stationed police station as well, a single-manned police station as well. So, you know, people do feel a bit disadvantaged. But the purpose of the survey that we're going to be doing is about safety and crime, is really to find information for the police where they can look at the trends and direct their resources, better direct their resources so that our communities do feel safer.
It's not long ago, Nolene, that rural support groups were telling people not to call the police specifically, not to dial 111, but to call their neighbours in a criminal emergency because it would simply logistically take the police too long to get there.
I think that that's the case as well. But the interesting thing is too is that we've just done a Feeling Rotten survey, and that was all about people feeling safer and feeling more comfortable around with their neighbours and friends and with groups than if they had gone to gone and sought professional support. So there's nothing like neighbours to help neighbours and friends and that on the same street.
Crime Stoppers.
On the same road.
Crime Stoppers, you know, that anonymous and non-police affiliated crime line that's been so successful in Australia and Britain. That's relatively new to New Zealand, isn't it? Do you think it has some elements that will be attractive to rural New Zealanders?
Oh, definitely. The problem with rural New Zealand is that a lot of people in an area will know each other. And so sometimes it can be a little difficult to report a crime. But if they go to Crime Stoppers, it removes that barrier or removes that direct link to the person with the police so that they can feel a lot safer reporting an incident.
Is it getting safer in the countryside? Is it about the same or is it getting less safe? What's your intuition?
Well, I think the survey is going to tell us more about how people are feeling about their personal safety, the safety of their property, and their general feelings of how they see crime in their area. So that's the purpose of the survey, is to find this information out, let the people tell us.
If it's online, can we help direct people to it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's on our website. You can www.ruralwomen.org.nz, and they'll see the link there to participate. So we want to encourage people. The important thing is that they remember when they are participating or filling it out, is that they remember to put in their postcode, because that'll be one of the ways that we can we can find out where the incidents are or where the people are most concerned about different things, and so the police can target their resources accordingly.
Great, Nolene. We'll be interested to hear what the results are when you finally get it all collated.
We'll keep you informed.
Thank you, Nolene Holt. Thanks, Nolene. Executive Officer of Rural Women New Zealand, Steve McCabe, Penny Ashton, are on the panel. And Warwick is standing by with the news headlines.